Art in the Final Push Forward. The final years of the women's suffrage campaign were marked by an intense burst of activity. Not only did suffragists ratchet up their activism, but they also worked in the shadows of an unprecedented world war. Toward the end of the second decade of the 20th century, the world was quickly changing, and it was in this context that women's suffrage began to seem inevitable. Art produced during these final years reflects that sense of inevitability with an unprecedented urgency and passion. Using motifs and themes that had been developed over the course of the movement, artists began to more directly address the cause's urgent political campaigns, using metaphor and allegory to make their importance immediately understandable. Artists also pulled back to make grand statements about women's roles in society. K.R. Chamberlain's powerful Woman's Sphere, figure 102, which was on the back cover of the 1917 suffrage issue of The Masses, is an example of the latter type of image. It simply shows a spotlight on the earth with the words Woman's Sphere below. No, it implies, a woman's sphere is not limited to the home. Women have a right to the world just like men. Things had changed, it asserted. The argument for women's suffrage was already won. Now, it was a matter of making women's suffrage a tangible reality. While bold, sweeping images like Chamberlain's were powerful, suffragist artists also made art that used simpler images to make their point. They examined policy and political campaigns that were vital to their cause, suffusing them with the same sense of inspiration and intensity. Much of this art related to the work being done at the state level to win women's suffrage, which women's rights advocates had turned their attention to after the failure of the federal suffrage amendment in 1887. By 1915, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, Idaho, Washington, California, Kansas, Oregon, Arizona, Montana, and Nevada had granted suffrage to women, and suffragists looked to these states for inspiration. Artists seized on this, making moving images that spoke to the importance of other states doing the same. Nina Allender's cartoon, Wise Women of the West, figure 103, for example, shows three wise women from the enlightened West before the U.S. Capitol, over which shines a star, referencing the Star of Bethlehem in the biblical story of the three wise men. Instead of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, however, these wise women bring loyalty, power, and courage to Washington. They exude grit and determination, and in the context of this rather spiritual image, the message is hopeful and persuasive. Another powerful approach to the topic was created by chief cartoonist for Puck magazine Henry Mayer in 1915 for the magazine's suffrage issue. The Awakening, figure 104, uses allegory and symbolism to make the case for women's suffrage in the East and is arguably one of the most iconic and powerful images created on behalf of the women's suffrage movement. Mayer's illustration shows a large map of the United States, with those states in which suffrage had been adopted colored white and marked clearly with the state's name. The eastern states, where suffrage had not been granted, were depicted as a murky black purgatory out of which suffering women struggled to rise up. Lady Liberty herself strides eastward across the more enlightened western states, bearing a torch to shed the light of justice on the rest of the nation. Her billowing golden cape bears the words, "Votes for Women." The image succinctly suggests that the country will not be whole until all women are granted suffrage, and while the women in the blackened eastern states seem to struggle, there is an optimistic sense that Lady Liberty is coming to their aid. As if Mayer's image weren't powerful enough, it is paired with a poem by Alice Dewar Miller, whose moving words march across the page with a pronounced rhythm to match that of the striding Lady Liberty. "Look forward, women, always. Utterly cast away the memory of hate and struggle and bitterness. Bonds may endure for a night, but freedom comes with the day, and the free must remember nothing less. Forget the strife. Remember those who strove, the first defeated women, gallant and few, who gave us hope, as a mother gives us love. Forget them not, and this remember too. How at the later call to come forth and unite, women untaught, uncounseled, alone and apart, rank upon rank came forth in unguessed might, each one answering the call of her own wise heart. They came from toil and want, from leisure and ease, those who knew only life and learned women of fame, girls and mothers of girls and the mothers of these, no one knew whence or how, but they came. The faces of some were stern, and some were gay, and some were pale with the terror of unreal dangers, but their hearts knew this, that hereafter, come what may, women to women would never again be strangers. Miller's stirring poem, utterly lacking the irony of her famous satirical poetry, is inspirational and aspirational. It captures the passion and urgency of this crucial moment in the fight for women's suffrage. Another powerful image produced for an NAWSA poster contest captured the same passion and urgency that was specific to this late moment in the women's suffrage campaign. Edward A. Poucher's The Woman's Hour Has Struck, figure 105, shows a suffragist pulling on a rope to ring a massive bell. There is no context or complex storytelling in the image, as the large text around her explains. Woman's suffrage is coming in 1917. The sense of inevitability in Poucher's image made it tremendously effective for the suffrage movement, especially in New York, where women were finally granted full suffrage that year. Another work in the same spirit was published in Puck magazine the same year. Revised, figure 106, by the same Chamberlain responsible for the powerful image Woman's Sphere, uses allegory paired along with tangible women's rights issues to create another uncommonly affecting illustration that touches once again on the question of woman's sphere. Chamberlain depicts an allegorical woman standing at a wall, editing the sentence, "Woman's sphere is the home," to read, "Woman's sphere is wherever she makes good." She holds a list of other possible options to explain what woman's sphere is. The home, the law, industry, the school, the stage, business, the arts. In sum, women should not be limited in their roles, but instead allowed to make good in service to their unique calling, just as men do. The woman, although unidentified, is dressed in a robe and flowing cloak that suggest classical mythology. She resembles a personification of one of the virtues. By linking this woman to classical mythology, however vaguely, Chamberlain elevates the subject matter here, and by extension, all women. Clearly, the image suggests women are on the side of justice and righteousness. On another level, Chamberlain adds to the growing chorus of voices saying that the writing was on the wall, so to speak, and that women's suffrage was inevitable. Even as women's suffrage became more of a foregone conclusion, many stubbornly resisted. A cartoon published on the cover of The Woman Citizen, figure 107, after the passage of the 19th Amendment, but before its ratification, alludes to this. A man identified as anti sits on top of the globe looking desperate and panicked. He struggles to keep a lid on the earth as a whole slew of forces, including suffrage sentiment, votes for women, sex equality, and woman suffrage in Denmark and Sweden, threaten to blow that lid, and the anti himself, right off. The man shouts, "Help! I can't keep it down!" Other images address the inevitability of women's suffrage by attacking the capriciousness of men who had so long fought against suffrage only to support it when it was sure to happen. Puck magazine's suffrage issue published a cartoon called Bandwagon Biography, figure 108, that shows the evolution of an anti-suffragist. As a small boy, he laughed at the suffragists. As a college student, he spoke out against suffragists. Later, he railed against the militant suffragists. But when suffrage became imminent, the cartoon explains, he said, "My friends, we have lived to see reason triumph over prejudice." In this last phase of his evolution, the man smilingly hops on to the Votes for Women bandwagon. Similarly, a cartoon published in the Washington Evening Star in 1918, figure 109, shows a crowd of men boarding the Votes for Women bandwagon, which is headed toward the U.S. Capitol building as a horn urgently blasts its last call. The image of the suffragist as a mother protector was also employed to powerful effect in the final days of the movement. These women came to symbolize not just suffragists themselves, but the positive effects women would have on policy and the realities of life in general. The October 27, 1917 issue of The Woman Citizen featured such an image on its cover, figure 110. It shows a tender young mother holding her infant and gazing lovingly into its eyes. The caption makes for a simple but incontestable argument. Women bring all voters into the world. Let women vote. A similar message, published on the cover of the same magazine in February of 1920, after the amendment was passed but before it was ratified, makes explicit the metaphor of suffragist as mother, figure 111. Here, a maternal figure wearing a sash with the words Suffrage Organization holds a small child with a sash marked Citizenship on her lap. The caption at the bottom clarifies the metaphor, handing on the work. As the tide was turning in the very last days of the women's suffrage campaign, women's voices had risen from a murmur into a veritable roar on the public stage. The woman's hour had indeed struck, and Congress finally embraced the inevitability of women's suffrage, passing the 19th Amendment on June 4, 1919, and sending it to the states for ratification. Although it would be more than a year before the amendment was ratified, there was clearly no turning back. The suffragists had won their hard-fought, multi-decade battle. Victory was finally theirs.